It's Illume Group's Andrea Lay, Packed View's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Wooden Hill Shri, and I'm PVSB from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 22nd, and of course it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We found them boundlessly intriguing. We hope you do too. Brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com. It's retail right now. Leading off, Shri.
Thank you, Peter. And Amazon Live introduces a new shoppable ad-supported channel to Prime Video called Freevee, featuring 24/7 interactive content from celebrities and brands, leveraging its Shop the Show technology to enhance viewer engagement and boost its advertising revenue. At least that's the plan. The channel leverages Amazon's Shop the Show technology to enable viewers to easily purchase content seen on the TV screen via a mobile device. The CPG guys and I are excited to try this out, and we will report back how it performs back here in one of our blogs on the CPG guys. So I look forward to that. Over to you, Peter, for what's going on with Walmart Marketplace.
Thanks, Shri. Walmart Marketplace opens Omni service to auto sellers. Walmart is enabling customers to order eligible tires from Walmart sellers and have them shipped to a local Walmart store for easy installation at their auto care centers. Walmart sellers have added 12,000 unique items, including specialty tires, to provide nearly 40,000 marketplace offers that are installation eligible at 2,300 auto care centers around the country. The expanded tire selection complements Walmart's existing auto services that include accessories and battery services, while giving sellers more access to Walmart's omnichannel customer base. Over to you, Andrea.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Amazon begins offering Dash Carts to other grocers. Amazon has begun offering its Dash Carts to third-party grocers, expanding the checkout technology beyond Amazon grocery banners and Whole Foods market stores, according to a blog post from the company. Amazon introduces Dash Carts to non-Amazon grocery stores, starting with select locations in the Kansas City area. This rollout comes shortly after Amazon ceased its Just Walk Out technology in Amazon Fresh and Whole Foods. Customers using Dash Carts tend to spend 10% more, with over 80% of the transactions from repeat users, highlighting the cart's convenience and efficiency. Over to you, Melissa.
So Heinz has launched a new limited edition barbecue sauce. Heinz and Barbie lovers in Europe are in luck. A limited edition pink vegan mayo with barbecue sauce was launched to celebrate Barbie's 65th anniversary. Mattel and Heinz have unveiled the new Heinz Classic barbecue sauce. It will be available in the UK and Spain initially, and may be available elsewhere in the future. Additionally, there's 5,000 bottles of the new sauce available to purchase online, but they can only be shipped to the UK and Ireland. So for those of you in the US who are curious, you can do what I do and go to TikTok and search pink barbecue sauce, and you will find it.
Thank you, Melissa. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Shri Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bolland, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. I'm, of course, your co-host, Shri. Not available today is my podcast sidekick and friend, Peter V.S. Bond. And when he's not co-hosting this podcast, he helps enterprise brands improve their SEO and SEM, growing their e-commerce business as partnership acceleration lead at none other than the Flywheel division of Omnicom. Please also listen to my older daughter Ria Raj's music at www.riaraj.com. That's R-H-E-A-R-A-J. With her news hit single Messy, and follow my younger daughter Lara on her journey as a founding member of the Cat's Eye Girls band by Hype Geffen Records of Universal Music Group, which debuts its first album shortly. Before we get to our guests, we want to ask you to spread the word about this community we've created in the CPG Guys. Beyond sharing our podcast with your friends, if you're using Apple Podcasts or Spotify as your preferred listening platform, leave us a rating as it helps feed the algorithm that makes us easily findable by CPG retail people like yourself looking for education and entertainment. But most importantly, it also tells us how we're doing. It's a scorecard. It tells us if we have the right guests on our show and whether we have the right topics on our show. We're happy that the CPG Guys is part of an impressive collective of highly rated podcasts, including CPG Guys Fast Forward, hosted by Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with Risa and Jennifer, and the FMCG Guys with Daniel, Efrain, and Christine. And finally, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, whose mission is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has terrific educational and networking resources available to its members. I serve as a director of Next Up on the board leading the fundraising and development committee. Links to our podcast, our sister cast, our landing page on Next Up, and the social media profiles of my daughter Rhea and Lara can be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. So, time for a conversation. We're partnering today with Price Spider, who helps the world's biggest brands, big and small, to enrich the consumer journey and build long-lasting relationships with their shoppers, resulting in more revenue and higher profit margins. Today, Price Spider serves many of the top Fortune 500 global brands. Their brand commerce platform is revolutionizing retail data technology by capturing actionable insights that improve the customer experience. Combining decades of data on consumer shopping behaviors with its proprietary data collection platform, Price Spider arms brands with intelligence from thousands of e-commerce sites and marketplaces to help them drive sales conversions and protect brand integrity of every possible digital touchpoint. So join me in welcoming to the show today SVP of Strategy and Director of Strategy for Price Spider, Brett Banner and Ray Gimo. Brett and Ray, how are you guys doing?
Doing well, Sri. Thanks for having us today.
Doing good. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Before we get to our questions, Brett, why don't you take a few minutes here and start with a high-level overview of who is Price Spider so that our audience, those that don't know you, can get to know you, and then your specific role, and then Ray, I'll ask you about your role as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So starting with Price Spider, we're a leading commerce enablement and analytics software provider that helps omni-channel brands take back control over the consumer journey. So brands can leverage our platform that's made up of digital shelf, where to buy, and shoppable solutions across any channel, any digital touch point, and any path to purchase along the way. So it's pretty simple. Our client is a brand manufacturer that sells their products online, primarily through a channel. So that's whether it's an indirect or a hybrid model. And we work with over 2,000 brands globally in almost every industry. I'd say our core three are CPG, consumer electronics, and hardware. So my role as an SVP of strategy is to help guide our market, product, and community direction and initiatives. So there's a lot of exciting things that we're doing as a company. I love that a large part of my role is connecting passionate people, great ideas, and best-in-class solutions to help brands grow. Part of that is collaborating with market and brand leaders like yourself to help e-commerce teams deliver a better brand strategy while growing sales, market share, and profitability more effectively. So we're really excited to join the podcast today to connect with you, to connect with your audience, and hope to share a perspective that's valuable for the team.
Ray, how about you?
Yeah, I'll go ahead. So I actually come from a background of brand and agency. So a lot of years experience in digital marketing, retail, e-commerce, and then really brand strategy when it comes to digital transformation. So I was working agency life with the Integer Group, now rebranded as Transact through Omnicom. And this company called Price Spider gave me a call to actually help them launch their new digital shelf analytics tool called Brand Monitor. So having used a lot of the competitors in the space, not been happy with the data was acquired, was really interesting to go in-house on the vendor side, work with some really cool crawling tech. And what that means is I often sit with our brands either in the prospecting phase or the expansion phase to really help listen to what are their goals, as Brent mentioned, across those omni-channel networks, as well as how can they improve that consumer experience. So I exist to help those brands help connect consumers to that product. Really, how do we make that consumer the hero of the day with the product that ultimately wins out in their basket? So happy to be on and share some of what we're seeing in the market, as well as some really good tips for what brands should be paying attention to today.
Very insightful. Thank you to both of you and welcome to both of you. In the digital liner notes of this episode, we'll include links to both your LinkedIn profiles, of course, Price Spider's company page, the website, so our listeners can access that on the go as they listen to the rest of this conversation. So Brad, I'm going to get started with you. While it's fairly intuitive, Price Spider, what that name means, I'm sure our audience is curious to learn what's the origin story of Price Spider, how and why did the company get started, What is the vision and mission behind Price Spider? And then what problem are you primarily trying to solve for brands?
Yeah, absolutely. So Price Spider is a great origin story. It goes back over 20 years. Both our founders are still actively involved in the business, and that was a big draw for why I joined. I like to say that we all got started because John Fortmiller, our president and co-founder, he quit his last job. That's where it all started. So he took a job at a tech consulting company called Neudesic, where Anthony Ferry, our CEO and co-founder, was also a founder. After a short time in the job, John let Anthony know he was quitting because the time demand was interfering with his passion project. So instead of accepting that resignation, they talked about this and really connected on his vision and decided to partner with John to bring it to market. From the onset, John was passionate really about solving big data problems, and he saw the need, especially to help visualize e-commerce data at scale. He just knew there was a better way at that time. So fun fact, the Price Spider started developing digital shelf capabilities dating back to 2003, dating back to that origin. But that's become part of our namesake because of early pricing intelligence components. But we really first became a household name in what we call where to buy through helping brands control the path to purchase. So for example, the omnichannel experience on websites, paid and social media, marketing campaigns, basically everything that is now called shoppable in the market, where we're connecting the consumer with the product and the retailer. Once our clients realized the value of the data and the leads they were generating for their retailer partners, and they could measure that, the digital shelf became a natural next step to further improve that experience. So the proprietary data acquisition models that John developed and perfected back then really made building the full platform stack possible. We helped a little bit with three acquisitions along the way to accelerate some of our strategic areas, but you know, that brings us fast forward to now. As far as our mission, it's pretty simple. We exist to help brands sell more products. Like I said, it's a simple statement, but it has a ton of complexity behind it. Our mission within that is to breathe life back into the buyer's journey, to help people fall back in love with the brands. And we say that because we have a really strong perspective that there's nothing more important than the relationship between the brand and the consumer. And we try to keep that intact wherever we can. So when we talk about problems, you said, what problems are we solving? Really, all brands are tasked with growing sales, market share, and profitability while staying relevant, right? So this becomes more and more complex, though, as consumer options and channels grow, as shopper behavior changes, and as market capabilities evolve. So we help solve kind of four interconnected problems. The first is giving back control to the brand. Brands sell through a channel. That doesn't mean that they should lose their brand, their identity, or their access to or relationship with that consumer. You know, brands spend millions of dollars in branding, product development, marketing, and channel management, and they really just need a way to drive consistent consumer experience across all those channels. But it needs to be dynamic control and insight over that full path to purchase. And they also need a check and balance to see the data and experience the data from the consumer's view in real time. So giving back control is a major problem of why we exist today. The second is re-architecting measuring models. So brands don't have the data infrastructure or capabilities really set up to fully measure the consumer journey in a model that considers cross-channel and counterpart metrics. There are some blind spots there. So many look at a linear funnel through a very specific lens of their role, their function, or a traditional stage in the funnel, and we're trying to expand that for brands. The third is breaking through organizational and data silos. This is a passion of mine. It's a universal challenge that brands have acknowledged. And it's just becoming more difficult because brand teams are being asked to do more with less. And I really like the trend that I see. I think it's a great start. I'd estimate that about 50% of enterprise level brands have a center of excellence. But really, regardless of the model, you just have to figure out where ownership lies within the organization. And there's no right or wrong answer, but we have to answer who ultimately owns the data and the reporting on that data. And then finally, scaling what works. You know, the depth and breadth of our data, our retailer network, and our platform, it allows brands to implement best practices to drive consistency and scale execution and insight but at a global level. And it's something that allows you to start in one area, but grow at your pace, knowing you have a future-proof commerce solution. We found that everyone has a different starting point, a different endpoint, and a different journey. So you need that flexibility and that scale within it.
So Brett, 2003 is two decades ago, and you are obviously one of the early movers in the space. Since then, there have been many players that have come up in this space in what I would call the omni-channel digital conversion, upper funnel, lower funnel, full funnel space, supporting all kinds of services. Tell our audience what makes PriceSpider superior. Why should they come to you?
Yeah, it starts with our data platform, right? If you think about it, what you're trying to do is find what's going on within your retailer sites, within your shoppable media, within your digital shelf, within your own sites, but at scale. And that's a data problem. That's a crawling problem. That's a data acquisition problem. And that's the core of what we do. That is definitely a differentiator. Part of that is the fuel for that, and that's our retailer network. You know, it's about sharing of data from the retailers to the brands and what's that shared value equation in which they want to do that with us, right? How do we unlock that? And the third is the platform itself. You know, from our measurement models and the platform itself, there is no vendor out there that can do both the digital shelf and these conversion applications under one roof. So when we could start showing cause and effect, and especially with AI and machine learning, even help audit and enforce some of this in real time. You know, a simple example with our price monitoring enforcement is you could have a pricing lever in your where to buy that says, look, if this person is violating my price in real time, even though they're an authorized seller, I'm not going to show them in the where to buy to redirect that traffic because there's a price violation we have to work through first. So if you think about that implication and what this can do, not only in just kind of the enablement piece, that then when you put AI on top of that with the data structure, it's pretty significant.
Ray, tell us what's hot right now in the shoppable ecosystem that brands need to be aware of. You know, with so much change happening in the omnichannel retail space right now, like what are some back to basics activities that brands should be aware of and also staying on top of?
Thanks. Great question. So for that, Brett touched on it a little bit, is brands are really looking to find that ROI at every touch point. And so they're seeing that shift in shopper behavior where shoppers are shopping in a very omni-channel, multi-channel way. That's one of the biggest pieces. I think brands also need to pay attention to private label. We've seen a lot of retailers stand up new private label, invest more in their private label, as well as say they're going to use that for growth too. So we know in 2023, based on PriceSpider research that we did in North America and Europe, that brands were actually seeing shoppers across some of those categories, hardware, beauty, consumer electronics, auto, CPG, make trade down to private label. Given where we are with inflation in the US and, you know, not expecting a Fed to cut the rate anytime soon, I think we're going to still see that pressure in those discretionary categories. So brands really need to focus on what are they saying with those everyday essentials? What are the private labels that are coming into their category in which that brand-owned product is under pressure in the basket? And that's a great piece that Brett pointed out. With basket-level detail, you can get that information as a brand. So if this shopper didn't buy my product, what are they actually buying? So I can further help understand competitive insights. The other piece is convenience. We've seen shoppers really respond to convenience-driven services. That's not only in, you know, checkout online, click and collect it, you know, at the grocery store, as well as get it maybe delivered via companies like Shipt, as well as, you know, those buy now, pay later options. So we saw brands kind of looking at that, retailers looking at that as a way to offer that shopper some more solutions when it comes to checkout and winning that purchase. So I expect that to increase more, especially given where we are looking at sort of the economy. The other piece to go along with that is generational change. Our millennials are, you know, looking at hopefully buying some of their first homes or at least looking at apartments, things like that. We've got Gen Z coming on, you know, our digital first consumers. They're really coming into their relationships with brands. And a key stat out today really was that we saw this kind of hit a focal point in 2020 with the pandemic. Those generations love to discover products by searching on social. So it's definitely flipped in terms of they don't go to retailers, they don't use search engines, they like to discover via social, they like to see that user-generated content. And they also really, you know, remark that they like it because it's relevant and fun. So that's just the further personalization of what a shopper is looking for. With the deprecation of third-party cookies, I expect brands to actually look a bit more into how can they help personalize experiences for shoppers, but also get some of that information and data behind the scenes in terms of what is that shopper ultimately doing in that engagement. So seeing a couple different things happen, I think it's all relevant when we're speaking with brands about how can we help them with digital transformation within their organizations, but also understand that not all channels are the same. They need to test and learn to figure out how to leverage some of those changes in the ecosystem. That's where I get to that second part of the question, back to basics. And they're going to seem pretty like, oh, no brainer there, right? But it's really about taking back that brand experience. So is your content retail and media ready? Really paying attention to how retailers are setting up those product detail pages. So I'm talking good health scores, you know, when it comes to what that brand wants to see, but also what are those different retailer capabilities in those cross-channel ways. It also gets back to understanding where you are in your share of voice. So Brett and I talk a little bit more about counterpart metrics and cross metrics when it comes to looking at channels. Brands really need to understand how they're looking at their overall business goals, the KPIs that are going to help them drive to those goals, and the data and metrics that are really going to be what I call the fuel to help them achieve that. So sort of a reassessment of the KPIs and the metrics and the data that is needed to help them achieve those goals. The other piece is we've seen it with interest across our platform in MAP monitoring and authorized sellers. More brands than ever, ones bigger than you think, don't have authorized seller programs. They're finally feeling that pain of price erosion. They're seeing what's happening when you've got that race to the bottom with price matching. And they're really looking to enforce not only for authorized seller programs, but also to understand gray market competitors as well. So a couple of those back to basics that are always good to make sure you're doing as a brand before you really start to go on the leading edge of what else you can do.
We'll move away from back to basics to the hottest buzzword in CPG and retail today. I call it a buzzword, but the reality is artificial intelligence has actually been around over 10 years when Amazon started saying, hey, this is what other buyers are buying today, or this is what we recommend based on your past purchases. That's all AI and ML at the end of the day. But it's here, it's loud, it's everywhere, and looks like every brand is now, every CMO and marketing VP is now chasing what are the implications. And then the various service providers we talk about on the show, they're anchoring it too as well. So I'm curious, for as much as you do in the services you provide up and down the full funnel, what are the implications?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take that one first, Brett, from the vendor side of it. So particularly around digital shelf analytics, what we talked about, like the basics of our platform runs on crawling. And crawling based on what the shopper is seeing in that experience. So the ways in which we're looking at AI as a vendor in terms of our core functionality and how we can help automate and scale even more so, because crawling has become more difficult. I always say, if you're a brand out there and you're doing an RFP on DSA providers, ask them how they get that data. What part is feed? What part is actual crawling at the retailer level, at the product detail page level? So that gets to fidelity, frequency, consistency of information. Coverage is a big one. Can you crawl in France? Can you crawl in emerging markets in Asia? What are you doing to adapt to blocking technology and CAPTCHAs like we see on Walmart and Amazon? So AI is a fundamental piece that is helping us at the core of our proprietary technology. That comes in the form of self-service tools for brands, being able to ingest new products within our platform so they don't have to wait to upload a new feed to us as their source of truth, as well as what our crawlers are able to do themselves. So we just launched a new press release on Brand Monitor and its auto heal capabilities. What that really means is how we are training the crawler to correct itself in an automatic way. So a little bit technical, but we parse for definitions, right? We need to collect that specific data field. The crawler is intelligent in a way that it recognizes it should be able to capture this data field, and it does not. So once it realizes that issue, it can actually go back, reparse it, and then fill in the code that's needed to make sure that it has a complete capture. The other piece is just optimizing that data capture. We know based on the length of how we capture things, not all of retailers change their data points with such frequency. So it's about being smart in terms of how we crawl, where we can expect a data point to change, and making sure we surface that to the brand in a timely fashion.
How awesome. Ray, let's talk about measurement. right? So how do you guys create a cohesive and equivalent view of the shopper ecosystem while measuring different channels side by side, whether it's different retailer marketplaces or even next to D2CC sites or a click-to-buy experience on social media?
Great question. And we touched on this a little bit, talking about those counterpart metrics and cross-channel metrics. And I'll kind of use a little example. Let's say I'm a beauty brand, and I know it's important to have my out-of-the-home advertisement, my shopper marketing spend at retailer networks. Maybe I've got Target ads running, as well as a really big campaign with social and influencer. So how do I measure things like share of voice across all of those channels? And so I think it's really important, and this is what we see too when we're helping organizations like with this digital transformation and change, is to recognize that those different channels, what are the key data points and metrics that are going to be share of voice? So when you're talking about at a retailer site, there's a couple different ways to look at that. The first is obviously organic search. Where am I in a search result from a keyword, branded, non-branded, on that page? Am I visible on the first page? Am I winning that top spot? What is my share of sponsored? So what is the odds that, you know, someone will be served that sponsored ad and that conversion rate through it? Social, it's really about traffic. It's about that engagement. Are we ultimately winning that conversion on social? And what is that share of basket? And so I think that's really cool that we have in our retailer partnership network, where we're actually sharing basket level data. A brand can actually track their share of product ownership within that basket and then also understand the share of other products within the basket. So if you take that and then you think about your share of voice in terms of what shows up on that first page of search results at a retailer, and then maybe you take a look at some of your out-of-home advertising where you're just looking at social engagement, conversation, you know, where are we showing up in our influencer campaigns? Those are the ways a brand can start to build those counterpart metrics to understand share of voice when it comes to their products within a multiverse, I kind of say, of retail channels available. There's, of course, other ones, but I think share of voice is a big one. We get asked by a lot of brands, how do you help measure that? We do across many of our products with actually some of those metrics that I just mentioned there.
A reminder to audience that we're speaking with Brett Banner, SVP of Strategy, and Ray Gimo, Director of Strategy at PriceSpider. Brett, your turn now. You know what our audience would love to hear from you? You guys have been around 20 years. Give us a scoop on, you know, we don't want to have this conversation based on only price monitoring. You're doing so much in the full funnel. Give us the scoop. What's the bunch of services you guys offer to brands?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll probably get back to when we meet with our clients in a business review, joint business planning. If we strip everything away, the one slide I like to look at and have a conversation about is that end-to-end consumer journey. And when we visualize that and we show every digital touch point along the way, and we talk about the vision of how you can layer in technology to control and visualize any one of those digital touch points, but also the data behind it. And that's where the real conversation starts to come to life. What that really looks like with our products, it starts with our where to buy and shoppable solutions. You know, that's probably the easiest layer. And it's no longer a nice to have, it's a must have. If you're selling through a channel, just the fact that your NPS scores on your website are going to go through the roof if you have a shopping option for them when you can't sell direct. The cost savings by people going into the brand, asking where your products are located, trying to do that manually with customer service teams, right? Just the baseline need for a solution like that is significant. And so what we can do, like we say, is layer in anytime your products and your consumers and your retailers are interacting, we want to make that connection point. That's through our where to buy services. That can expand to any campaigns, that can expand to social media, that can expand really to anywhere you want a link or a call to action, anywhere on your website or outside of your website. We have that same ability to control that. That allows you then to decide, do I want to send it to a landing page? Do I want to send it to a retailer product detail page? Do I want to send it to my product detail page or directly into a cart at the retailer, right? So we're thinking one click, two click, three click experiences. That's the whole shoppability side. And like I said, from there, it's when you're sending that traffic to that retailer, what are the things that you want to monitor? we have a digital shelf platform that has six different modules. So it depends on what you're trying to solve for first. Is it pricing? Is it share of voice and share of search? Is it content? Is it images? Is it videos, right? So we have clients, global clients, that they're very mature and they want it all across 56 markets. We have others that just get started where we first put in that consumer conversion layer to understand what's going on within what I control, and then figuring out where my starting point is with how I want to work with my channel.
Where to buy, price monitoring, digital shelf, you have a lot of services. Surely, Brett, AI has got to be in the middle of all of this. What's the connection with AI?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think you all mentioned it before. It's everywhere. And, you know, what I see, it's when people are talking about it at conferences and panel discussions, et cetera, I'm seeing brands have more tangible application. They're defining it more. It's more tangible. And because of that, I see a resurgence of measurement. You know, a very telling stat that always caught me recently was that brands are leveraging about 34% of their potential from their MarTech stacks. It's pretty staggering, right? And the top reasons they identified was complexity of the current ecosystem, customer data challenges, and inflexible governance. But at the same time, a very similar study with a very similar audience said that 98% were working with real-time data or plan to get there by this year, and 90% plus have planned AI investments. So those two things almost contradict each other, right? But it shows that brands are motivated again to solve a historically hard problem internally because of the potential of what AI can do and unlock. You know, it leads to AI-driven insight, AI-driven content, AI-driven consumer experiences. You know, I think people are looking at the data differently because it's a lot of data. It's big data problems. And there's only so much a human can bite off at once. But if we can get the data layer, and then if we could figure out the algorithms, we could teach robots to do that, right? The biggest thing that I'm thinking far off from that is AI shopping. Everything we know and love, you know, how will we need to adapt to everything we know when AI is shopping or taking action on our behalf, right? When you think about the digital shelf, when you think about the consumer journey, now a human isn't even involved. So that's kind of the future state that we have to get really good at the here and now before that's more the reality.
So AI is in the middle of everything you guys do, obviously, given the scale. You said 50 plus countries in the global market that you guys touch. So with that kind of scale, and consumer habits changing rapidly post-pandemic, how are your own services kind of evolving to meet those changing consumer habits?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Shopper habits, expectations, they're shifting at a rapid pace. Ray spoke to it a lot, and I'll steal something she always says. It's the rise of that digital-first shopper. I love that saying. It makes me think of Star Wars or something, but in e-commerce. But an interesting perspective I heard from a CEO of a service provider called Obsess. I'm not sure if you've heard of them, but they build immersive virtual stores and experiences. It's really cool stuff. I believe I heard her say 80% of Gen Zers consider themselves gamers. So her perspective was that the PDP hasn't really changed much in decades. And so part of adapting is needing to gamify shopping to keep it relevant. And maybe that's some of the draw to live shopping on channels like TikTok, right? But regardless, what we know is that there's going to continue to be more ways to purchase, more ways to pay, more ways to collect, more channels, more marketplaces, and more risk to profitability. And so online and in-store, that's already blurred. Those lines are so blurred, it almost doesn't exist in some cases from the shopper's perspective. But at the core of it all, brands need visibility and actionability at scale to evolve. And that kind of reinforces where we play today. But I'm watching kind of four shopper habits in particular. First being shoppers are price sensitive, savvy shoppers. I mean, if you see how this younger generation shops, it's amazing. And I think brands are really going to be stretched in this area just based on micro and macro economic factors, based on where we're at today. But we need to consider what we've done with price monitoring and enforcement But then expand on that to look at price, discount, payment options side by side. I don't think anyone's doing that really well. And so there's going to have to be more data pulled into that equation. I think the second one is shoppers don't follow a linear funnel or stay within any given channel. We love for it to be really clean, right? But they're all over the place. And so we need to continue to think about how we enable broader insight, identify those actionable events earlier cross-channel. The third being shoppers don't read anymore. You know, we need to keep an eye on the heavy use of video, imagery, and immersive experiences that's going to be the highest conversion drivers. You know, I think you have to provide a seamless journey when it comes to content and descriptions. And that is another reason why you really got to accelerate how you think about the cross-channel, when you think about descriptions, when you think about content, because more and more, there's only a few things that are really differentiating and selling these products. And then last is just the shopper personalization. We talked about it all, but there's some like the younger generation, they love personalization. They want it. They want it to be authentic and they want it to be truly personalized. And so we need to just figure out how we continue to do that at scale.
You bet.
And I'll add on there too. We're already seeing it with Walmart purchasing TV brand, right? So they're definitely diving more into how can we make, and obviously they're trying to like fill in the Amazon model there, but how can they have consumers have a real connected TV experience, right? They know they're watching TV, then they'll probably have their phone with them too. We've seen more of a resurgence with some of our shoppable solutions and brands looking and testing QR codes. We've seen them out at events as well. I sort of say anything can be a digital shelf. That's really what brands have to prepare for. And it's part because we are really seeing that generational change. They want it to be visual. They want it to be quick. They want it to be relevant. So those are some ways too. I think we're seeing it. And even, you know, Target just launched, you know, that they're going to have a membership program. So what's that coming up to? How are they going to further tailor, I think, a personalized experience? I do think it is retailers and brands trying to react for this need of personalization, as well as knowing some consumers are okay not sharing that information because they don't want to feel like they're having a tracked experience, right? There are other generations that embrace that and say, as long as it's relevant to me, and hey, maybe I get rewards points, right? Gamification, we see this a lot in Asia, you know, sign me up for it, right? Right? I want to be inspired and, you know, have some fun with what you're showing. Fun was a big indicator of why they look at social media for researching products.
So one curiosity question just popped up in my head, Ray, something you mentioned a while ago, which was the cookie deprecation piece. Cookie deprecation is obviously going to change advertising.
Yeah.
The process is just about begin, early days, but in the next 2 years, it's going to be massive. How does cookie deprecation actually impact PriceSpider services, or does it at all, given y'all are not necessarily in the hardcore advertising game?
That's a good question there. And for us, really, it's minimal because the way our where to buy and shoppable solutions work is that, you know, we're able to have that retailer data so that if a brand has, for example, Google Analytics, you know, they can sort of have an unidentified bridge between that data to understand shopper behavior. So we've been looking at third-party deprecation coming. There are some brands who are already have reviewed where they're getting data from. Is it third-party data? Is it first-party data? How do they help kind of bridge that gap? PriceSpider has been working with the idea that you're going to see that happen with the deprecation of cookies. And so that's why really the strength of our retailer partnerships, how we're able to help brands connect what's happening in areas that are going to become more of a black hole. A lot of our brands say they're sort of underwhelmed with the data they get when they pay for those retailer network media and advertising. They're always asking, how can we get more audience data? How can we get more information on retargeting? I always like to say, I want to know, great, these shoppers are in market for my product. Awesome. Let's make sure they're not going to be a lapsed shopper. But can you tell me also who's in lifestyle? And what are other areas and other categories I can use some of that advertising dollar to maybe back off on SEO, sponsored media spend, and explore some of that out of the home connected TV? We see a lot of brands using email marketing again, because it does, you know, get that first party consent. It's a reason when you pop on a brand website now, hey, give us your email, you're going to get a code or a reward, right? That brand is actively seeking that first party consent so they can then retarget. But One of the things I really like about Price Spider's strength in the retailer network and what we're able to see with insights with our Where to Buy and Shoppable tools is what other products are also in the basket to help brands with that audience building and retargeting. If you're a purchaser of coffee, you might see water, other wellness and health supplies in that basket. So that might suggest some potential widening of that pool that you're marketing to on, for example, an Instagram, a TikTok, you know, maybe even exploring QR codes at a bigger event where you know your shopper is most likely to attend.
Thank you so much for that, Ray. But that very same scale that you just referred to and all these services Brett referred to, it also means that you have to gather data and from so many websites. You said over 1,000 commerce marketplaces of all kinds, retail,
yes,
third party, whatever the case might be, right? How the heck does somebody actually gather that much data and keep it up to speed, that too dynamically across so many retailers? I mean, what day-to-day challenges do you face in doing that?
That's one of the questions I had when I came on to Price Spider. Like, okay, now I'm inside. Tell me how we do this. And I love nothing more than sitting with John, you know, talking about recent crawling innovations, recent CAPTCHA. It's always that dance. There's an art and a science to crawling, as well as getting our data points. So I did do my homework and I did some math. So on an everyday basis, typically, we are matching over 25 million products. So let's help your listeners visualize what that means. 25 million products. Say there's an average of 40,000 products in a grocery store. I'll put you on the spot. How many grocery stores do you think that is? If you can do the quick math in your head. So 20 million products, 40K on average in a grocery store. How many grocery stores is Price Spider essentially matching products to every day? It's over 600. It's like 625 grocery stores. Take that a little bit further, a Costco.
Every day is the word.
Every day. So let's think about Costco, right? Something maybe a little bit more relevant to. 4K is about the average products in a Costco. And if you work for Costco and you can help me with my math there, please let me know. But that would be over 6,000 Costco stores in terms of products that we're matching a day, to help put it in perspective.
You don't want to talk about how many SKUs that intersects with, because that number is going to be mind-boggling.
It's a lot, because you do like the timesing math. So I'd say it's to the nth degree. I'll probably have to go back to John and say, what is the actual math? But the other thing is we do over 60 million product updates a day. So whether that's price, ratings and review score, image updates, because there's been a change to the retailer channel. So it's really several times a day when we're seeing, I always say, think about it as a city that never sleeps, right? Our Price Spider crawlers never sleep. And I love that they're crawling while I'm sleeping, because we mentioned the human toll is huge. So there's all kinds of things happening in a city like New York, a city like London, you know, every day dynamically over time. And that's really what our Price Spider crawlers are doing. They're always buzzing with data. Our dashboards refresh hourly, sometimes minutes within those crawls. So Brett mentioned it before. Brands really want to get to real time. I always say, why? What is that data set that's going to help you make a decision that you can be confident in, action on it, evaluate it, and then evolve it if you need to? For some brands, it means, Ray, I want you to get me crawls as close to the hour as you can. For other brands, you know, where their data doesn't change as much, they're like, hey, I'm happy with once a week. Just please make it automatic. I can't do this manual anymore. So I like to think of our product updates like a bustling city. There's things constantly changing all the time. And, you know, one of those ways I mentioned too is that evolution of our crawlers. Some say, oh, you've been around for 20 years. You must be a Luddite. No, no, no. Because honestly, I got into this business selling ringtones, right? The first edition of the Razor. Now they relaunched the Razor because it was so popular to begin with. So just because you've been around for 2 decades does not mean you're irrelevant anymore. It really is why we enjoy being on the leading edge of data crawling.
How awesome. Brad, I got a couple quick ones for you here. The first one is the three primary large services you guys are in, right? Why is it important to look at the digital shelf side by side with shoppable media and Where to Buy?
Yeah, I mean, for me, this is the number one question to ask and answer for our clients. We've probably done 20 different events this year in various forms, and measurement specific to this is what we're talking about. And we're getting a lot of traction on it. You know, it's based on everything we talked about. An omnichannel approach needs to measure multiple paths to purchase, but it needs a standardized full funnel metric set across those channels. That allows us to have a consistent foundation to test and learn at the aggregate level. But you also have to be able to drill into variables that different channels and paths may have, right? So you take that one step further, then you have to analyze against a benchmark. Well, where do I get the benchmark from? Well, you need that consistent journey, right? And that's got to be at each level. And then you've got to tie that to that consumer journey, you know? And so if we hold these things to be true, the question really is, how long can brands afford not to have this in place? Like they're clamoring. And again, everything I talked about, we're ready to do that now. They're ready to do that now. So when looking at the e-commerce funnel, we often talk about how you measure certain metrics to optimize certain parts of the funnel. And even their silos internally, such as looking at share of voice as a metric for your visibility, competitiveness, placements, and ranking within a category on a marketplace. You know, however, metrics across each stage of the funnel actually work hand in hand together to tell us about the user experience. The example I bring up that's super relevant, easy to resonate, is if I'm trying to optimize conversions, it's of course a function of traffic and conversion rate, but what is the customer actually responding to? So on one hand, it might be the product imagery itself. And that doesn't just exist on my PDP. And most consumers, if they get to your PDP, they've probably already seen a product image at least twice, probably more, right? So I've got product imagery on the digital shelf in search results. I have it in the on-site retail media ads. I have it in my Facebook and Instagram ads and my display retargeting ads. So what metrics am I going to look at to optimize that imagery? So we're trying to say, look at the click-through rates of those ads. Look at the interaction rate in search and browser results in marketplaces. And of course, look at the conversion rate on the PDP. If we can look at those counterpart metrics together, not only are we gathering results faster, but we have more data. But I'm also looking at the full picture of that user experience and not making assumptions based on just one interaction point. That's pretty radical. Like it's easy to understand. And most brands we work with and brand leaders, they get it. But the gap in the right measurement, the right structure, the right visibility at scale varies significantly. It's a lot easier said than done. And so we're trying to help bridge that gap.
What a fascinating episode. We've kind of gone all the way from top of the funnel to lower funnel, covered the full funnel and all the services you guys provide. Here on the CPG Guys, the last question we always ask, it's called fast forward. So we'll turn the table over to each of you and ask you for a little bit of a prediction, which is your insights about the future on this space. And then give us a peek under the tent. What is Price Spider planning for or doubling down on as it looks into the future? So maybe Ray, we'll ask you for predictions first. And then Brett, we'll ask you to give us a peek under the tent.
All right, I'll go first up. So first thing I really see, it goes back to what Brett mentioned on brands, you know, honestly not using their marketing tech and their data stack efficiently, not seeding that information across their organization. So I see further questioning and further strategic ways forwards from brands on how to use that data stack more. I love the power of data to be an equalizing factor. I don't care if you're from sales. I don't care if you're from brand side. I don't care if you're the C-suite. What are we going to do to get to our success story? We have our goals, we have our KPIs, let's get to the metrics and the data that is really going to fuel that. So I always say data can be a great, you know, silo slayer. So I look to see more of that happening. From brands, they're going to have to deal with this generational change. It is happening because we have an aging population worldwide. So if they weren't paying attention for the last couple of years as they sort of had the COVID boom, unfortunately, because so many things moved into e-commerce, now they're really seeing a diminishing return on, in some cases, inactivity, not understanding the ways in which shoppers are shopping, as well as updating their consumer demographics. So brands are at all different places in that maturity channel, but I think we're going to see a level setting of what it really means to have those engaging, personalized shopper experiences that ultimately drive sales and loyalty. Loyalty is a big one. It's up for grabs right now. We've seen that in our own research on private label. We know there's other retailers that are, you know, dipping into it. The other piece is continued ask for marketplace monitoring. Temu is launching with US sellers, right, this quarter. So they started last year, but you still had largely sellers available in China. So I think we're going to continue to see the ask from brands, and this gets to future capability, monitoring 3Ps, wrangling what to do with marketplaces, because Walmart and having a Walmart marketplace opened that up even more so than just worrying about Amazon. So brands are really starting to understand the pressure from new marketplaces coming on.
All right, Brett, take it away. Give us a peek under the tent. Price Spider, future, how do the two intersect? What are you guys working on? What's the magic?
Yeah, so, I mean, really everything we talked about for me consistently straddles between the future and the present, you know, and it's based on where brand's maturity is, right? There's a lot that we've talked about, even the back to basics, that really is the future for some brands. But everything we talked about, what Ray talked about, we see that on the horizon. There's five areas that I say we're really double downing on because of where we need to focus. First being a little bit more external, and that's investing in our network and community programs. We're in a really unique position to multiply the value for our clients and the industry through these programs and our market leading position. But we're taking an approach and a strategy that we're going to do this together. We're going to do this with great thought leaders. We're going to do this with great complementary solutions. We want to make sure we're just looking at this vision and seeing how we collectively can help brands grow. The second one being we're investing in our data acquisition and retailer capabilities. We lead in this area, and we're going to continue to advance to keep that position. That's, again, that's our secret sauce. That's the reason why we're here. That's the reason why we've been so successful over the years. We're investing in AI, obviously. You know, for all the reasons discussed, that's a huge growth opportunity for all of us in this industry. We're investing in shoppable, right? That's where we became a household name. It's one of our core competencies, but it's staying at that bleeding edge. It's looking at everything we talked about from marketplaces to social media. TikTok's really interesting. That virtual buying experience is really interesting. So we constantly have to think, right? When we started with where to buy, it was, do you want to buy online or local? And that was it. That was the two questions. You know, if you really look at the matrix, there's 5 million questions of how you want to buy and actually acquire that product these days. And then the last is we're investing in the measurement platform. You know, we've had so much data that is just so, no one else has, right? But I would say that a lot of brands are data rich, but insight poor. And there have been years where we have basically said, look, use this data however you'd like, ingest it however you'd like, report on it however you'd like. But more and more you find they don't have the time, energy, or resources to do it. So we need to continue to push forward. We launched new reporting portals across all of our platforms and then continue to push more reporting and more AI capabilities to help with that measurement model that we see as the future and the next big thing in measurement.
Awesome, guys. Let me remind the audience that you can find all of our content on cpgguys.com. And if you think you or your company has some thought leadership to contribute to our community, just like Ray and Brett did today, drop us a line at contact@cpgguys.com. Again, email to contact@cpgguys.com, and maybe you can join us on the podcast. Don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com on the navigation bar at the top. You make the show. You tell us who to bring on the show, what topics to discuss. I can't thank our followers enough. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here with us and making the show real and scaled. Brett and Ray, thank you for joining me today and sharing insights all the way again. Like I said, top of the funnel, bottom of the funnel, the digital shelf, monitoring, pricing, you name it. Thank you so much to both of you.
Thank you, Sri. Great to be here.
Thanks, Sri. Appreciate it.
That's a wrap of this episode. We will see you soon in another episode of the CPG Guys.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.